Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Wendy Carlisle and this week's show, The Concussion Games. Right around the world, concern about the link between long-term brain injury and sports-related concussion is growing. A class action in the United States by 4,000 former gridiron players against the NFL has resulted in an offer to settle for more than $750 million. There's no doubt legal action like that is focusing the minds of sports administrators, including the AFL here in Australia. Today's Background Briefing investigates why prominent members of the AFL's expert concussion group have attacked the growing evidence linking concussion and brain injury and accused scientists of dodgy research and fear-mongering.
Storming back into the grand final. Down by just a point now.
High on!
McVay the high ball. Pike
wrestled. The 2012 grand final went down to the wire. Swans midfielder Jude Bolton, one of the toughest and most fearless players in the game, took a knock with only minutes to go.
It was basically on the wing, only a few minutes to go in the game. Laid a tackle and my head hit the ground. I remember getting up and looking at which way am I kicking. I don't know which way I'm kicking, and I pretty much turned around, and I think Kieran Jack sort of helped me up, and then I just turned around and just jogged off because I knew I didn't want to be looking like an idiot and pick up the ball and kick it the wrong way.
Bolton took himself off the field. He wanted to collect himself for one final assault to make sure Hawthorn didn't sneak back into the game.
I know, I just did my standard walk along the sidelines, get a bit of a breath, and didn't even tell the doctors or anything like that. I think it was I just ran straight back on after a bit of a break. And
oh, so you went back on in 2012?
Yeah.
Bolton bangs it forward. Can they create here? They need a lucky bounce. Morton, can he take them all on? He'll need to. He did pretty well. He did very well. Jack running onto it with Young. This is big. This is really big. It's a dead set massive moment.
In Australian rules football, the players are fitter and bigger, and the knocks are faster and harder. Speaking at a recent FIFA conference, here's the AFL's chief concussion expert, Associate Professor Paul McCrory.
This is the sort of sport that I deal with, not a wussy sport like American football. This has 15 times the rate of concussion that American football has. This particular impact that you're seeing here is a 54 kilometre an hour impact. So that's equivalent to a pedestrian in a motor vehicle accident, somebody falling off a horse, any major sort of trauma that you'd like to think of.
Grand final from the top shelf, there's the bounce. Both Luckman hanging on. Kennedy can't emerge with a football, knocked forward by Savage. Hanbury to Malcheski. Is that the grand final? Sydney Apprentice.
And what about after the game? Did you get a checkup?
Too busy celebrating winning a premiership. There's other things to worry about.
Number 24, Jude Bolton.
This is for the Lions again.
Thank you, Jude.
As the party began, Jude Bolton realised he had no idea if he finished on or off the field when the whistle blew. He had to look at the match replay to get the answer.
I know, having finished the game, and I remember having a chat to Adam Spencer at the celebrations and things like that, and I really wasn't aware whether I'd finished on the ground. I had the feeling that I was off the ground. Looking back on the tape, I was definitely off the ground.
12 months before his retirement, Jude Bolton started to rethink his attitude.
My grandfather used to say it's better to wake up in an ambulance than duck out of a contest. So I think that was the nature of footy. But it was actually my grandfather who probably changed my opinion, because after that game he said, boy, you don't want to be a dribbling mess when you're an old man either. So it was interesting that he was the one who probably changed my mindset about it a little bit.
What also changed his mind was what was happening in the States. The story about a class action by 4,000 former gridiron players against the NFL for allegedly concealing the evidence about the link between brain injury and concussion had washed up in Australia. And everybody had heard about something called CTE, or chronic traumatic encephalopathy, which was linked to an early onset of dementia in some former gridiron players.
I mean, we all sort of saw what happened out of the States, and there's some terrible situations of mental effects post-football, and I struggle to really liken the two at this stage, because I know NFL in the sense that they're so combative at training. In every game, it is just head-on-head clash. By wearing the helmet, they think they're protected, so they're using it like a battering ram. I mean, I've been probably fortunate to have a long career, but I've still only probably had 5 concussions on my hand that I can really think of that were serious.
And that's the nub of it. What constitutes a serious concussion? And how many or how little is potentially dangerous? Concussion-related brain injury is a new and fast-growing field of knowledge, with some research indicating that even knocks to the head, which don't produce any concussion symptoms, may be dangerous. Leading neurosurgeon Dr. Richard Parkinson has been researching concussion for the NRL and is calling for more research in the field.
My personal feeling is that it's an area which deserves the highest priority in terms of research. Just for example, my recollection is there's about 300,000 registered rugby players in amateur sport in Australia. That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
It's becoming more interesting as a girls' sport. So, you know, the future is very bright for rugby and for other codes of football, assuming that we maintain the safety of the players.
Keeping players safe in a collision sport, which is designed to inflict some form of injury, is, of course, the stated aim of all the codes. The AFL has been at the forefront of this, introducing concussion sub-rules and sideline testing in an effort to remove concussed players from the field. But somewhat controversially, the AFL says that concussion causes no damage to the brain and that its effects are short-lived. It's not an opinion Dr. Richard Parkinson agrees with.
What we do know, though, based on current research, is that every concussion is a potentially severe head injury, and every concussion can potentially cause damage to the brain.
Physical damage to the brain.
Correct. Disruption of the neurons, scarring of the brain, it certainly can happen.
Well, I just want to quote to you the definition of concussion from the AFL.
Yeah.
And they've said that concussion does not involve a structural injury to the brain.
That's not necessarily true. It can.
Okay, so what their definition of concussion is that, in a sense, it's a short-lived physiological disturbance. Is that true?
No.
So how long can it go for, the problem?
Well, the symptoms can last from weeks to months or even be permanent.
In 2010, as more research started to come in pointing to the links between concussion in former players and long-term brain injuries, CTE, depression, suicide and cognitive problems, the AFL initiated a coordinated response to the concussion crisis. They established an expert concussion group, and their role is to advise the AFL about concussion and to direct its research effort. Its leader is the formidable former Hawthorn Club doctor, Associate Professor Paul McCrory. Paul McCrory has been the leading AFL voice casting doubt on the link between sports-related concussions and long-term brain injury. At a FIFA conference last year, Paul McCrory suggested that even if dementia-like conditions such as CTE did exist, its numbers were so low it wasn't worth worrying about.
Let me say to you that the incidence of this condition is vanishingly rare, somewhere about 0.00001% of all people who play American football. So it's not a huge number. It is almost zero.
Paul McCrory declined to be interviewed by Background Briefing and also declined to provide his evidence in support of this statement. At the same conference, he said that concern about CTE was waning, and that it was a media beat-up.
It's fair to say that there's increasing scepticism around the world as to whether this condition actually exists or not, and that might seem very strange and provocative to say that, because if you listen to the media, you get a very different story. The media will tell you that it's a conspiracy, that every hit causes brain damage. None of that's true.
Despite Paul McCrory's scepticism, there is increasing concern about chronic traumatic encephalopathy, so much so that the International Rugby Board and the National Football League have now acknowledged the link. In his busy consulting rooms at Sydney's St Vincent's Hospital, Dr Richard Parkinson tells Background Briefing he sees many players with ongoing problems from concussion, and some are worried about CTE.
In terms of concussions, as I said, more research is required, both on what causes the concussions, what sort of hits a player has that doesn't cause a concussion, what the long-term impact is, and whether or not a percentage of these players end up with CTE. Certainly I get some calls to my practice from players who are concerned about it.
But what's unsettling is it's not yet possible to diagnose CTE in the living. It's only observed in brain pathology examination. And that's just one of the reasons that more research is needed.
Well, again, this is a young area in terms of research, but there has certainly been recognition over a long period of time, for example, with boxers, that chronic injury and chronic head impacts can predispose you to chronic brain damage, that sort of Muhammad Ali punch-drunk syndrome. And it's certainly real, and we have seen similar changes in players playing other contact sports, including US football and ice hockey in particular.
But how real is the link? Background Briefing wanted to know if Dr. Parkinson believed, as AFL experts do, that there is no evidence for the link between repeated concussions and chronic traumatic encephalopathy.
No, I wouldn't say that at all. I would say that there's certainly evidence that, for example, US NFL players whose brains have been examined, who've died from unrelated causes, a percentage of them have shown changes consistent with chronic traumatic encephalopathy.
Adorning the walls of Dr. Parkinson's consulting rooms are the framed jerseys from many famous and grateful patients. At his desk, he pulled up a series of slides showing pathology images of chronic traumatic encephalopathy in human brains.
What CTE is it's an accumulation of an abnormal protein in areas where the brain could be knocked. So that's normal. That's an NFL player and that's a boxer. So you can see this accumulation of this TOR protein.
You say it's a protein. So it's like a, it's thickening, it's shriveling the brain.
Correct. Yeah, it's a type of scar tissue.
The tau protein Dr. Parkinson is referring to is a scar tissue. It's one of the telltale markers of the disease.
And so the thinking is that the tau protein is part of what creates the chronic traumatic encephalopathy.
Yeah.
Because people who've got dementia have it, do they?
They do. People with Alzheimer's have an accumulation of a similar protein. Yes. And that's where all this is coming from, is drawing a line between the tau protein with CTE, with possible CTE, and Alzheimer's dementia, and are the two...
connected, related, yeah.
Analogous.
CTE was first diagnosed in a football player after the death of US gridiron player Mike Webster, known as Iron Mike, over a decade ago. Webster died at 50 with dementia-like symptoms, and the autopsy of his brain changed football forever because it showed all the telltale signs of chronic traumatic encephalopathy, which causes early-onset dementia. The findings spearheaded the campaign by former players to have their on-field injuries recognised, and much of the research spearheading that has come out of Boston University's Centre for the Study of CTE. At the Boston University Brain Bank, researchers have been studying footballers' brains, and the research has been published widely, and they are now collaborating with the US National Institute of Health and the US Defence Force on concussion research. Co-director of the CTE Centre is Professor Bob Cantu.
Short of genetic factors that we don't know about, all the cases of CTE do not involve alcoholism, do not involve anabolic steroids, do not involve other drugs. The only one constant with every case is repetitive head trauma.
One way of thinking about the relative risk of a concussed player getting CTE is to relate it to smoking and cancer.
Yes, there are other factors that need to be present, just like smoking doesn't cause lung cancer in everybody that smokes. but it clearly causes lung cancer. Well, the same is true of chronic traumatic encephalopathy. The one constant you need is repetitive brain trauma. Are there other factors? Unquestionably, almost certainly genetic factors, just like there are in who smokes and who gets cancer and who doesn't.
But the AFL disputes this. In fact, key members of its expert concussion group have consistently cast doubt on the link between repeated concussions and long-term brain damage, from CTE to memory and mood disorders. And they've denigrated the credibility of the leading scientists in this field. The only member of the AFL's expert concussion group who agreed to speak with Background Briefing is Dr. Hugh Seward, CEO of the AFL Doctors Association. And according to Dr. Seward, the evidence linking repeated concussion and long-term brain injury is fairly weak.
All we have at the moment is a lot of circumstantial evidence saying sportsmen have a higher incidence of depression. There are some sportsmen who have suffered concussion who also have some dementia. At the same time, there's a huge number of sportsmen who have suffered concussion who don't appear to have any long-term problems. So when we put all that together, we now need lots of research to be done. Some of the research is giving us some assistance in this direction, but almost as every bit of that jigsaw is put together, even more uncertainty is raised.
So you say that there's circumstantial evidence. So you put it no higher than circumstantial.
That's what our evidence at the moment is, exactly.
So from what I'm taking at a very sort of common sense level is that you are, in a sense, when it boils down to it, you're denying the link between concussion, sports-related concussions, and brain injury.
I think that's quite an extraordinary thing that you've suggested. I'm not denying the link at all. I'm saying the link that we have...
Well, you're saying it's circumstantial.
That's not denying it. And when we're looking at...
It's not proof, then, is what you're saying.
That's right. We don't have proof. If you can show me that there is significant proof, then that would change my view.
I'm just putting it to you because I just wanted to quote for you some of the comments from Associate Professor Paul McCrory, who's written that there is no evidence for a link between CTE and sports-related concussions. And this is actually quite the contrary to what's being found in the United States, which is finding, and in Europe, which is finding good correlations between the injuries, the concussions that footballers and professional athletes are incurring and their longer-term injuries. He's denying that. I think that's a fair statement.
Yes, well, it's interesting that he is probably one of the foremost experts in the world. He's spending his whole life researching this to try and ascertain what, if any, links there are.
But for the last decade, Associate Professor Paul McCrory has not conducted original clinical research into the link between chronic traumatic encephalopathy and concussion. However, he has written many reviews and editorials about the disease. For nearly 5 years, the AFL has been claiming to have detailed research programs underway into concussion, but little detail has been forthcoming. The AFL listed one study, said to be examining present and former players who've been concussed, to see if they're having long-term problems. Background Briefing asked Dr. Seward about that research, what it was and where it was up to.
The study that we're doing is looking at small numbers of those players who have had concussion using the high technology MRI scanning that is not the normal MRI scanning that people might be sent for by their doctor.
The research you're talking about didn't begin until 2012.
That's correct.
So what research was underway when that report was written, looking at the longer term outcomes in current and former AFL players who'd sustained concussions?
So the effects that we're looking at when we're looking at the longer term was those who are recovering within the weeks and months after the injury, not players 20 or 30 years later.
Okay, but the research that was identified in that report was tracking the longer-term outcomes in current and former AFL players. What research was that?
Well, that's the one, they're the projects that I've been referring to.
But they weren't announced when that statement was made.
No.
So
that was, I suppose, we'd best say that at that stage was aspirational, and we're still, some of that work's been done, but the research hasn't been published as yet.
Well, it says underway. It doesn't say being planned. It says this research is happening.
That was our intent at the time.
Is that not misleading for the AFL to suggest it's doing research into the longer term outcomes of AFL players who've had concussions?
I don't believe so.
4 years after it was first announced, this MRI project is still in a pilot stage and has tested just a dozen or so players. And in March last year, it was re-announced as part of a collaboration between the AFL and the Florey Institute of Neuroscience and Mental Health. But there's no reference to it on the Florey Institute's list of research projects. Players like Jude Bolton are interested in the answer to only one question.
I want to know whether there is a causal relationship between multiple concussions and dementia and all the things that can occur later on in life. I want to nut that out, and I want to see how our players are faring in the later life.
Since his retirement, Jude Bolton has been speaking out and trying to change the culture about concussion. And like many players, he's trusting the AFL to come up with the answers.
My grandmother suffered dementia, and it was a horrible thing to see my grandmother go through, and the whole family go through, just seeing her deteriorate over a number of years. It was horrific. And, I just hate to think that playing the sport I love would have that link.
You're on time. Thanks, everybody, for coming. Sitting to my right is...
At the launch of its annual injury report last month, the AFL explained that it would take some time, possibly decades, for Jude Bolton's questions to be answered. Here's the AFL's football operations boss, Mark Evans.
Longitudinal research, by its very nature, takes a longer period of time. And the question for the AFL is to make sure that our policies and our rules and our judiciary and our sideline management and our education awareness doesn't wait for that research. We don't want to sit here for 10, 15 years waiting for that research to come in.
Sitting alongside him is Dr. Hugh Seward.
The brain being so complex, we don't really understand the intricacies of how the normal brain works. So to try and understand in a short space of time how concussion affects the brain is not easy, and it's going to take a long time. We would hope would show that it's not as fearsome as some of the stories coming out of America are.
The long time the AFL is talking about is another 10, 20 and 30 years of research. But according to the leading CTE expert, Dr. Willie Stewart, from the Institute of Neurological Sciences in Glasgow, you don't need to wait that long for the answers.
That's unfortunately nonsense. What I would say, using a sporting context, that's a way of kicking it into the long grass. Come back in 20 years and we'll tell you whether playing sport might increase your risk of dementia. That's ridiculous.
Last month, Dr. Stewart published research which established that British soccer star Jeff Aston died from chronic traumatic encephalopathy.
Yes, we do need to do longitudinal studies, no doubt about that at all. But that is something we can begin now. But at the same time, we should be looking at, is there an increased instance of dementia in these sports? And to be honest, the questions have been answered. In American football, that's been answered. In boxing, that's been answered. To some extent, in association football, that has been looked into in terms of motor neuron disease, a fairly high number Italian study. So, some of these questions have already been answered. I don't really accept the argument that we need to wait another 20, 30 years to come up with the answer. Does repeatedly injuring your brain over and over and over again perhaps put you at greater risk of long-term problems? Of course it does. I think we have a public health duty to look into this. And I think that we're incumbent to say this is a problem associated with exposure to repetitive brain injury until we have any better evidence.
That's not the position taken by the AFL. They want long-term research to prove cause and effect. And that starts with an online survey of player health that is being coordinated through the AFL Players Association. The AFL's concussion expert, Dr. Hugh Seward, explains.
Because we're looking at conditions that may not present themselves for 20 to 30 years following a traumatic event, what in the AFL we're doing is trying to look at players who have retired after playing 20 years ago or 30 years ago. We're surveying as many past players as will participate, past professional AFL or then would have been VFL players, to participate in a questionnaire as a fact-finding process, then to identify those who suffer either mental health issues or cognitive issues and undertake more intensive research on that group.
First mooted 4 years ago, the survey has not yet been distributed. And when it is, the preliminary results will not be made available for 12 months, according to the AFL. Dr. Willie Stewart thinks a better idea would be to locate former concussed players from the AFL's database and follow up with them.
I'm not sure that would provide all the answers. It's a step in the right direction. That work has been carried out in American football some years ago with postal and online surveys and demonstrated that the risk of early onset dementia was severalfold higher in that population. I mean, I think if you know, a group like the AFL doctors have gathered that information over a number of years, possibly a better way to go about it might be to try and track some of these people down from 1992 and thereafter and sit down face to face with them. You get an awful lot more meaningful information from face to face inquiry and examination than you do from trusting people to fill out an online questionnaire.
Because I guess the people who are filling out online questionnaires, firstly, you've got to assume that they can identify their own problem or want to talk about it, but also whether they've got access to the internet if this occurred in 1992 or whether they're well enough to do it.
That's exactly the problem. By asking people to connect remotely, then you are immediately, your sample is going to be biased in some way because the people who are most affected won't be able to interact with you. Some of the people who are particularly affected won't necessarily be able to interact with a computer.
Earlier this year, former rugby international turned journalist Peter Fitzsimons presented an investigation into concussion and brain injury on Channel 7. Fitzsimons told the story of former South Sydney rugby league great Ian Roberts, who'd taken part in a study of former players to assess whether they had brain damage and to see if this was related to their concussions. The story was picked up the following morning on Triple J.
You're listening to Hack on Triple J with Tom Tilley.
How many times
would Ian Roberts was on the line and he told host Tom Tilley that the tests had confirmed he had brain damage.
Yes, and my results came back positive, as in negative for me personally, but positive as a result. But they tested at my stage, I think they'd tested 44 people, and of the 44, 35 of those had come back with positive results. The reason I got involved in doing the story is I just think kids and medical staff, coaching staff of kids should all know that, you know, it's not okay now to, if a kid takes a hard knock, to whack a sponge in their face and pat them on the back and tell them to get up and shake it off, they'll be all right in 10 minutes. I mean, concussion is a serious injury.
Listening into the interview was neurosurgeon Associate Professor Gavin Davis, a leading member of the AFL's expert concussion group. He poured cold water on Ian Roberts' story.
I just think that whilst I am happy that people are having this discussion and it's worthwhile people being aware of concussion, a few people are going a little bit over the top talking about chronic injury and chronic effects of concussion. What we need to do is make people aware of concussion, that they understand it. We don't have any evidence that concussion causes long-term side effects in the majority of people. We suspect that those who are claiming long-term memory problems may be due to other things, such as genetics, drugs, alcohol, steroid abuse, a whole number of things. And these things have never been looked at.
Professor Davis was asked for his views about the US research from the Boston University's Center for the Study of CTE, because one of the researchers, Chris Nowinski, had featured in Fitzsimmons' TV story.
Okay, first of all, let's clarify who Chris Nowinski is. He's not an academic. He's a former professional wrestler, and he is the person who's going around the world spruiking for money for the Boston University research team.
Indeed, Chris Nowinski is a former wrestler with a PhD whose publishing record includes original research published in core clinical journals. Professor Davis then launched into an attack on the credibility of the research.
Secondly, the research that they've done, they've actually pulled back and recanted some of their publications because when it's been peer-reviewed, it's been found that there are some faults with their studies. So what we're saying is, let's have an open mind, let's not jump to conclusions, which the Boston group have done, and let's analyse the data properly.
All right, Gavin Davis, very interesting to speak to you and hear you pour a lot of cold water on some of that research from Boston and the reporting done on Channel 7 last night. Thanks for joining us.
Pleasure.
Professor Davis had attacked the credibility of key international research in the field, and Background Briefing put in a call to Chris Nowinski and asked him if the allegations were true.
No, that's a flat-out lie. I was actually surprised to hear that because doctors aren't supposed to, lie to the public on national radio about a very serious health problem. So that was quite a shock.
Background Briefing can find no evidence to support Professor Davis's statements. He declined to be interviewed or provide evidence in support of his claims. But he told the program he stands by his statements.
I don't know why there are people out there that are still trying to push out misinformation about what the study of CTE has told us. But, what we have found is that the people who tend to criticize the work vocally, basically the only people left in the world, tend to always be associated with professional sports leagues who have some sort of financial liability. Is Professor Davis associated with the professional sports league?
Well, he's on their expert concussion group, on the AFL's expert concussion group.
Huh, well, that doesn't surprise me then. It's unfortunate, but there are people out there, and they've been doing it here for decades in the United States that are trying to protect the status quo. Although most don't usually go to lies to get there. They usually try to misstate the research or misstate what we're saying about the research and say we must be crazy. But they rarely go to the extent of just flat-out lying.
Chris Nowinski, Background Briefing is not suggesting Professor Davis's views are influenced by the AFL or his role as a member of the AFL Expert Concussion Group.
Took the ball forward, bumped off a couple of players, got a great pass back to Godden.
Mark Glanville played over 250 first-grade rugby league games with the Newcastle Knights and St George before finishing his career in British rugby in the late 1990s. He suffered too many concussions to remember.
So a couple of the more serious ones is one when I was playing with the Knights, I think it might have been around 1990 or thereabouts, and got actually cleaned up by Steve Roach, and can't remember too much of it. Got carried off the field and woke up in the dressing rooms.
It was only when Mark hit his mid-40s that he started to notice some problems with his memory and mood.
I guess I had to concentrate on things, or write things down all the time now that I don't forget those sort of things. Whether that's a case of just me getting older, I don't know, but...
Did your family start to notice things as well?
Well, certainly my wife did, and would be constantly telling me, well, how come you keep forgetting this? I've told you five or six times and, you're still forgetting, and, my kids would tell me things and I'd forget those, so.
Like Ian Roberts, Mark Glanville had seen a TV story about footballers and concussion. and the one he saw featured Brownlow medalist Greg Williams, who discovered that he had brain damage. So Mark got in touch with the research team at Deakin University, who'd tested Greg Williams, to see if they could help him.
It wasn't as bad as Greg Williams or Sean Valentine, but it showed that, I was certainly had, I guess, suffered some damage and some, you know, my brain was being affected.
And what was it like getting that news?
I guess it was certainly a bit concerning. I mean, I thought, yeah, possibly, you know, I mean, over the years that I played, I probably got concussed, you know, maybe 7 or 8 times. So I'm thinking, yeah, it's probably got to do some damage somewhere to the brain. So, yeah, it certainly was concerning. But in saying that, look, I'd go out and do it again tomorrow. And, you know, because of the, you know, the great memories I've got, I just hopefully I'll be able to continue to remember those memories.
The lead researcher with the footballer study at Deakin University is psychologist Dr. Alan Pearce. The study of over 40 players was yet more evidence that repeated concussions were causing problems for players in later life. Dr. Alan Pearce.
And what we found was that in both groups of footballers, we found changes in brain activity using brain stimulation, and we can look at the activity of the brain using this particular technique, which they use quite extensively in neurology. We also sort of showed that with functional measures like fine motor control, dexterity, and also the reaction time, that was different to the healthy people as well.
It's all preliminary research, but according to Dr. Pearce, the evidence is building.
My research is just a drop in the ocean, really, of what the bigger picture is with the amount of concussion research that's going on around the world. And I think we need to be a little bit more, I guess, open to what is happening, particularly in the United States, who are showing quite a lot of evidence of the association between repeated concussions and mental health issues later in life. I think we need to keep exploring it and looking, because, as they say, and I think in the cancer research, you know, if you don't suspect it, you can't detect it.
At 48, Mark Glanville is upbeat about his future. It's not all doom and gloom. The Deakin research team have given him brain exercises to help him, and that's given him some hope. But what Mark can't know right now is whether his health will really get worse, and whether that is conclusively linked to his playing career. He just wants to know the answer.
You know, for me, it's important to prove that, you know, there is that possible link. That way the game, hopefully, then will be safer. Players will be protected down the track. There's maybe a fund to call on to actually pay the bills, and so you're not just getting it out of your own pocket. You know, you had the case in the States with the NFL and the ex-players there that had a law case going against the NFL. You know, I'm not about going after the league for that, but, you know, we need to have things in place so that doesn't happen, I guess, and so players are protected after they play as well as, you know, when they're playing the game.
Because at the moment you're financially exposed, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, without doubt. You know, but as I said, that's the way the game is. I mean, although I do think to myself, look, you know, if you're working in an industry and you for 15 years or whatever and you left that industry and you end up with health-related problems because you worked in that industry, I'm sure there's probably workers' comp to help you continue on or cover your medical needs or those sort of things. So,
do you have that?
No, there's no workers' comp in rugby league.
So while the collision sports in Australia play a complicated concussion game, players like Mark Glanville, Greg Williams, Ian Roberts and Jude Bolton are in a terrible kind of limbo.
Crash, bash, that's the Swans' way, and they're home all right. They've done it. What a team. That culture, the Bloods, that's what it's all about.
There's big money involved, billion-dollar broadcast contracts, lucrative player deals, gambling and advertising, all designed to create a physical contest where winning the ball at all costs is everything. Players' lives are at stake, perhaps even the viability of the codes. And it's all swinging on one question. Does repeatedly knocking the brain put players at greater risk of serious damage? And if so, who's most at risk? Dr. Willie Stewart.
In the world of brain injury, we recognise that concussion is a brain injury, that there is structural damage done. We recognise that it doesn't matter what sport you're playing or where that concussion comes, the injury is the same. We recognise that in a proportion of people, and it may be a small number, that repeatedly injuring your brain can lead to long-term problems. So we recognise that. Unfortunately, it would appear that the only nation state that seems to have accepted that and the only sports that seem to have accepted that are in North America. And so American football, ice hockey and a number of other sports have got to grips with this and are acting quite sensibly on it. Once you get out of North America and begin to travel the world, it would appear that we're it's a groundhog day. We're going back round the same discussions, the same arguments, sport by sport, country by country, region by region. So Australia's not unique. We're having the same conversations in the UK and Europe.
Background Briefing's coordinating producer is Linda McGuinness. Research, Anna Whitfeld. Technical production, Simon Branthwaite. The executive producer this week is Joe Gelonesi, and I'm Wendy Carlisle.